So Venerable, there is also another question from Yolana about, she's heard that from others about the importance of forgiveness to the departing person, apologising for mistakes done and so on. So what is the importance of this?
Forgiveness for the person to forgive or for us
forgiveness.
To forgive the person?
So how important it is for the dying person to forgive, yeah. Or seek forgiveness, probably both.
Well, either way, with forgiveness, it helps bring a peaceful state of mind. If someone, you know, if there's been especially disruption in a family, because often there are family disruptions, and sometimes people are estranged from their family for a long time, and sometimes people won't forgive. And it's one of the things, if someone's separated from their family and lost track of them, if you can somehow find that person, to if that's what the dying person wants. But it's tricky if the dying person is looking for some sort of forgiveness or reconciliation with the person, but then that person doesn't want it. That can be even more distressing. If the person's child, friend, relative, whatever, you know, wants to say something and that person doesn't want to see them, doesn't want to know. Sometimes you can encourage whichever person it is that wants to make some contact, some resolution, either give or accept forgiveness. Sometimes if the person refuses, you can get them to write something like that. But it's one of the very tricky things. If the person refuses, either way, if the person refuses, a woman I know, she'd lost contact with her two children in England when she came to Australia with an Australian man, and they were not happy about that situation and felt that she'd abandoned them, even though they were young adults by then. So the social worker in the hospice where she was living towards the end of her life tried to contact them, and social workers in England did actually find both daughters, or found one and they knew where the other one was, and one daughter did come over to Australia to see her, but the other one completely refused anything. So this, you know, it can be like that. One can travel halfway around the world, or they may refuse to see, and then you have to deal with, you know, the difficulties of that. It would be nice if people could all be nice all our lives, but sometimes it's said that this time around death in palliative care brings out the best in the person who's dying, the worst in the family, because if they start to bicker about, you know, inheritances or who said what or who did, you know, or they're a family that is apart because they can't be content together, and it can be quite tricky negotiating your way around all of those things. Yeah. And it's really unfortunate if people, the more that can be done to help the person achieve a calm, peaceful, accepting, settled state of mind, the better, but it isn't always possible.
And so for the dying person, how important is it for them to apologise for mistakes that they've done?
Well, they may not see them as mistakes. They might see them as me just asserting my right to say what I want. Another person might see it as a mistake. If they want to apologise and the person doesn't want to see them and accept it face to face, they can put it in writing or even apologise, you know, on the phone, you know, so that there's a sense of them having apologised. Whether the other person accepts is a different thing, but they can certainly, yeah, as I say, in writing or recorded on a phone or something, they can make that apology and encourage them to see that as that from their side, they've done as much as they can. And maybe it's later on that person either reads that or listens to it or something like that. There's no, easy way around some of these family or close friends sort of situations from the past. So we're going to look at how to help someone who's Buddhist. So when Inta McKim, who started Lama Rigthama Center, was dying, her main teacher, Lama Zopa Rinpoche, said to her, live like a billionaire, which didn't mean go and spend all the money. It meant, you know, do the things, whatever it is that's right for you at this time. Don't worry about, you know, eating chocolate for breakfast and Weet-Bix for dinner and, you know, whatever it was, not that she ever ate Weet-Bix, but whatever it is that is going to be, you know, happy making for you. And so certainly those of us who were around her tried as much as we could to do those things for her. And so if whatever questions the dying person might have about Buddhism or something like that, if you don't have the understanding or the answers, trying to find those from people who do. Ideally, with someone who's Buddhist, if you can find out who they see as their main teacher and get advice from that teacher about what practices are going to be most beneficial. And that can vary widely. And so different people I know who've asked Lama Zopa Rinpoche, Inta was the first, but other students of his, none of the answers from him have been the same. Some have been to sponsor a puja in some particular monastery somewhere. One of our nuns who died was sponsor a geshe, who I think was in New Zealand at the time, to do some particular practices. So Lama Zopa doesn't have some just wrote, here's the list. If he's got a list, it's try to understand the five opponent power, the five forces at the time of death, which we've talked about. And and sometimes you can help them with doing their practices if it's too difficult for them, either by reading them or recording them and playing that recording for them. And so if a person's got particular faith in a particular Buddha, whether that's like medicine Buddha or Amitai's Buddha or something like that, you can encourage them to do that particular practice, whatever, say that mantra. You can help them with saying that mantra. At the time that Inta was dying, there was a bunch of us there who had not her main practice. Most of us didn't have that practice, but Lama Zopa gave us permission to say that mantra to her, and we did for about 24 hours or something before she died. There was someone with her all the time saying that mantra, even though I'm sure my pronunciation nearly drove her nuts, but and probably some of the other pronunciations as well. But that was his advice, and we tried to do the best we could to follow his advice for that particular student. But it's been different for the other students of his that I've had anything to do with. And if a person's got a particular daily practice, making sure that, you know, someone who's able to do that practice can help them, or get someone who has it to record it so you can play it to them. Because if they've got a commitment to do it but are not physically well enough to do it, it's good for them to not start fretting about breaking their commitments and things like that. And sometimes with the best will in the world, if the person's feeling sick and then the medication makes them sleepy and things, they just can't, you know, do it well, but they can listen. They can listen to it. If the person practices, you know, says a mantra and you can say that mantra with them, then if they nod off, then still the mantra continues and things like that. And Lama Zopa says if a person or an animal's dying, in general, if you don't have advice, the Medicine Buddha mantra, it can be on a CD or it can be someone saying it or whatever it might be. It helps purify all sorts of negativities and prevents the person, if you like, being the potential for the person to be reborn in an unfortunate situation. we talked about having some images around as much as possible. It's helpful to recite different mantras and things like that, and but having advice on which ones are most beneficial for that person is the most important thing. Sometimes a person has a commitment to do a daily practice and they fall into intensive care or have a stroke or something and there's no way they can be doing it. It would be really fortunate if that was the uppermost in their mind, and while they were what we see as unconscious, they were actually being able to do that. But yeah, as much as possible, finding someone who can help them with that. Sometimes the person, if they've had that experience, they might want to purify, retake vows, things like that, and anything you can do to help them with those things is useful. If the person is open to it, you can talk about you know, their practice, but we also have to be careful not to introduce too many new things that might be confusing if the person can't clearly think about them or might upset them or something like that. The important thing is to help the person have a calm, peaceful state of mind, and to just have a positive state of mind through the dying process. So if it's someone's a Buddhist but they haven't got particular practices and things like that, you can still help them remember the virtuous things in their lifetime, dedicating the merit of those to having a good future rebirth, being able to practice the Dharma, being able to benefit others, all those sorts of things. You can put their name on the dedication list for the nuns saying prayers up at Chenrezig Institute. You can do particular things like make dedications for the pujas at Lumritumpa Centre or at Chenrezig Institute. You can bring them an image if they have a connection with a particular Buddha. These different sorts of things, all the sorts of things that remind them of their spiritual path, but also others doing practices and dedicating for them during this process. And for the person who is Buddhist, you know, when you're just sitting, you can be saying mantras, or whether the person's Buddhist or not, you can be saying mantras and quietly under your breath or reading sutras or whatever it might be that helps you be calm and peaceful and bring that sense of calm and peace to the room and to the person who's dying. It's in this teachings of this, you know, this hard advice for death and dying, it says the quality of presence is the best thing to bring into the sick room. And this means the ability to be present with suffering or whatever's going on for that person without trying to fix it, change the subject, suppress it, or might make light of what they're feeling. To not dismiss it in any way, to just accept this is what they're experiencing now. And that can be really difficult because they might be talking about something where you were present and your perception of what was happening was completely different. Doesn't matter. What matters to this person dying right now is their memory, their perception, and just being with that. You don't have to believe it. If you had a different perception, maybe your perception was right or wrong, maybe theirs was right or wrong. We're just trying to accept, just be there, the person there, helping this person through that process, and as much as possible helping them to come to some peaceful resolution of whatever the situation was. And this is the real gift you can offer this person. If you can do this, then you can really help them. You can give them that opportunity to express the things that they experience, the way they experience it, and let them be able to find some resolution of whatever's upsetting them, or just give them the opportunity to talk about their life, the good things, the not so good things, whatever it might be. It's the gift of running around buying them a thing is not going to be the most beneficial gift at this time. If you can find them a blessing cord or a something like that, maybe, because that's been blessed by holy beings. But just being able to sit and be with them, this is very important.
So what about kind of the urge some people get for small talk?
It's quite tricky, and it's a way often of not letting the talk get too heavy. It's like chatter, 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 and we're talking about, you know, the quality of the biscuits you bought last week and how they went off so quickly, or whatever, doesn't matter. It's a way of not allowing them the opportunity to talk about what's important for them, or to just sit in silence. I used to visit a woman, I didn't meet her until she was in a hospice, an inpatient hospice, and she liked me to just sit. That the two of us just sat and not talk. I mean, she talked enough about, I knew her and her family also talked about her, but she liked, she'd asked the family to leave and that we just sat. I'm not sure what it was directly she got from it, but there were several times when she asked the family to leave. A staff member came in once and we were just sitting, and so she started to talk to me about something, and this lady opened her eyes and said, "We're just having some quiet time, thank you." And I was like, so this was, people are different. This is just, she just wanted to sit and be, for me to just sit with her. And this is, it's not always easy. If sometimes we can't even be really silent with ourselves, we have to ring up someone or text someone or check how many COVID cases there are in the world or America or whatever. We've just got to be distracting our mind from just being still. We've got to do something to fill up the silence, even the silence in our own mind. So it can be doing something we're not used to much at all. And it's not that the person's wrong. They're doing what they think might be really, the person might like to know those things. But sometimes people just like to be still. And so it can be difficult at times, but if that's what the person wants, very important. And try not to say or do anything that might worry the person. And if they talk about worries about, it's very hard when people die and their children are still young, they worry about who's going to look after the children, who's going to manage all the different things about care of the children and things like that. And you can't dismiss that. You can't just say, don't worry, because it is a worry. But, you know, there are things you know, just try to encourage them to accept that there are people who are going to try and care for them, who, and they will miss their mum or their dad. But, yeah. So try not to give them anything else new to worry about, I guess. And so there's also looking after someone who's not Buddhist. So they might belong to another spiritual tradition, another religion. And so try to make some effort to, I've sometimes said to people, you know, you say you're from Christian background, would you like me to try and arrange a Christian person to come and see you and things like that? But sometimes there's reasons why they don't want that. But sometimes you can talk to them in terms of, if you have an understanding of some of the basic teachings of the Christian tradition, you can talk to them about, you know, God and the teachings of Jesus and, you know, those sorts of things. I'm the way, the truth, and the life, come unto me, and all those sorts of things that are part of the teachings of that Christian tradition, and help them to feel confident that they will be achieving that goal of being taken up to heaven when they die and that sort of thing. And we need to be respectful of the person's spiritual tradition and not, in capital letters, says do not attempt to impose our spiritual beliefs on the person. This is definitely not the time to be asking someone to change their religion. This is a time when they're already sick, they're full of nausea, pain, medication that makes you feel really weird. No one's thinking clearly here. What we're trying to do is encourage them to reconnect with their spiritual belief. And His Holiness has said, even if you find things beneficial in Buddhism, he wasn't talking about people dying, he was talking about people in general. There's no need to change religion. Any religion that you have faith in, then that's a religion for you in this lifetime. And the methods that you might find helpful in Buddhism, use them. And he's literally said to be the best Christian, the best Hindu, the best Muslim that you can be, whatever your spirit, if you find meditation helpful, if you find, you know, using the four opponent powers helpful, whatever it might be, use that to be, you know, the best possible practitioner of your own religious faith. So that's the sort of thing that we're trying to be here. Not doing anything disrespectful or unethical in terms of that person's faith, or that might just bring them more confusion.
So what about people with no faith? I mean, so many people in
Australia.
This is
very next thing.
Oh, right. Have no religion at all.
Yes, I know. The census had said like a third of us have no religion, but I'm firmly of the belief that if they'd said football or sport, 50%. Sport. So if the person doesn't have a religion as such, then sometimes they will say, but I was brought up, my family were Church of England or Methodist or something. And so some of those ethical principles that are shared in common with all religions, like kindness and tolerance and, you know, refraining from stealing and lying and those sorts of things, these things are held in common across. So they have those sort of things in, they might be discussed in a different way, 10 commandments instead of 10 non-virtues, that sort of thing. And sometimes if you know some of the terminology of a particular tradition, you can use that. Otherwise, using sort of non-religious terminology, but still to talk to them about being free of negative and upsetting thoughts, and if they have some weighing on their mind, is there some way they can be resolved? Talking to them about the things that would help them find a peaceful state of mind. Sometimes people will say, you know, I don't believe there's any life after I stop breathing, but they're very fine for their name to go on to the dedication list up at Chenrezig Institute for health and life obstacles, you know, for people who are sick and things like that. Sometimes, you know, people say, one man literally said to me, so what does your religion teach about, you know, dying and things like that? And so he was open to asking, he was asking me about what the Buddhist teaching was, and so then I could talk to him about that. And he actually had not visions, but sort of he had an awareness of other, of there being other beings around him and things like that. So he wanted to talk about that and what that meant and things like that. So, you know, you can, if someone says what do you think happens at the time of death, so you can talk about your beliefs, you can talk about, if someone asked me that as a Buddhist nun, I talk to them about the Buddhist teachings about what happens. And, you know, you can't just launch into some 5-hour long dissertation, but, you know, just generally, and then if they ask for more information, then, you know, you might give more information, they have questions and things like that. And sometimes, you know, you can sort of encourage them to talk about what they think and things like that. Of course, if someone genuinely wants to know, like that man, about the Buddhist beliefs, then you can talk about what the Buddha taught about past and future lives and this sort of thing, about the importance of kindness, compassion, letting go of negative states of mind, resentments, you know, these sorts of things that are going to help. And these all lay karmic connections that in future lifetimes will ripen at some future lifetime. So, but we need to be careful not to try and impose, to not say, this is the truth of the matter. It's not like that. It's, if you ask, then that's okay. So if a person's, you know, is not Buddhist, and they're not asking about it, then, you know, then it's not a good idea to be sort of trying to say, oh, you need to be listening to these mantras and you need to put your Buddha and all that. That's not going to be helpful. They probably never want to see you again. But it doesn't stop us. You know, if we're sitting with the person and just sitting, it doesn't stop us developing our loving kindness, developing our compassion for this person who's obviously in a really unwell state, and all the other people who are on different things like this, and or saying the mantras of Chenrezig or Maitreya or whatever to just bring some of that calm, peaceful energy into us, but also then into the room and for being available for that other person. So we can visualize Medicine Buddha above the person and light come flowing into them, whatever it is that you feel comfortable just doing for yourself. So in a similar way to humans, when animals are dying, it's also good to have a very calm, peaceful environment, playing mantras, giving them their favourite food, sitting with them, keeping them warm, all this sort of thing. And of course, what often comes up for in terms of animals, the vets will say, you know, oh, there's no cure, and so the best thing is to put them out of their misery, you know, euthanasia and things like that. And this is quite common. There's a Buddhist view that if they can live out their lives, then it can complete the karma of having that suffering. But, you know, with pain relief and those sorts of things. His Holiness, at when he was at Australia Zoo, I can't remember what year, he said that, you know, if the animal's free of pain and the cost, you know, then that's okay. Just let them live out their life, even though you might need to be helping them more with things. If there's treatment that's prohibitively expensive and things like that, then, you know, euthanasia might be what's beneficial. You know, he said, you know, you don't have to take on great debt or anything like that. But then, you know, we do the four opponent powers. We purify whatever negative karma there might be. Remembering that this, in this situation, the euthanasia, even though we're saying it's okay to end the animal's life, it is out of compassion. It's out of the wish that they not suffer, which is, you know, a different motivation, and the motivation is very important. And so for those who've studied karma, would like it, discovering Buddhism level and things like that, the action's not complete because there's no rejoicing in the end of the life. So if you know about the karmic paths, then, you know, it's not complete. There's no malice, there's no anger, anything like that. And there's no rejoicing. There's, in fact, sadness. So, and again, you can dedicate for the future rebirths. You can dedicate at pujas. You can put their name on a dedication list, and at Chenrezig, the nuns will dedicate for 49 days. You can do the Bardo prayer for the animal. All of these things you can do. And it says if they've got, you know, good quality leads and warming pads and bowls and dishes and things, leftover food, you can donate that to an animal refuge or something like that, you know. Generosity for the animal. And so, of course, the other thing that comes up is, you know, euthanasia for humans now. This is, they call it voluntary assisted dying. So you have to keep in mind that in Queensland, it is illegal, it's a criminal offence to assist someone in ending their life. However, in Victoria, in your handouts, there's a story about the First Lady that legally her life was ended under the laws there for voluntary assisted dying. And this has been discussed in both Tasmania and Western Australia, and in one or the other, it's passed the second, it hasn't been brought into law yet, but this is something that's being discussed to bring into Australia, but at the moment not in Queensland. And sometimes it's very hard. People will say, if I was an animal, you'd have me put down. But as much as possible, you know, we have to be aware that there's, you know, healthcare for humans at a very different level of cost than it is to animals and things like that, and try to be supportive. And often, sometimes people will ask about it, but then they're asking about it in terms of if the pain gets too great, or the pain cannot be controlled, or the whatever the situation becomes too difficult for them to bear. But generally, with good palliative care, with support and things like that, then that they're not it doesn't sort of weigh on them. They can achieve this calm, peaceful state of mind. The request is usually about the fear of how the disease is going to progress, how much suffering there will be. So that's generally what it's about. For Australia, for Queensland residents, only legal in Zurich, and there's no travelling over there now. I'm not sure what the law is going to be like in Tasmania and Western Australia. In Victoria, you have to have lived there for a year and a few other qualifications like that. So the other thing that comes up sometimes is about organ donation, but in reality, people who are dying of a disease, you know, where we would be caring for them, usually their organs are not in any suitable state for transplant. And the organs that are suitable for transplant are healthy people who are killed in an accident. And there's very little crossover of those sorts of things. If you're dying of a disease, then it's unlikely that you're even if the disease is like a heart disease or a kidney disease, it's unlikely that your organs, your other organs, are going to be healthy enough for transplant. But in one of the sutras, the jewel ornament for liberation, it quotes a sutra this is 2,500 years ago, so I'm not sure how you would have been able to actually physically accomplish this 2,500 years, but in the willingness to give, that, you know, if someone requested something, that you would be willing to give it even if you can't. But what, of course, many of us give, of course, is blood. People do blood donations and things like that. And just having that willingness to give, this is a generosity. The person who needs your blood, whether it's because they're hemophiliac and they just use a portion of the blood, or they use the cells and not the, all these different things they do, or whether it's whole blood for someone who's, you know, had an accident and lost blood and things like that. So the one thing that we can, and many people do for a long time in their life, is to give their blood. But what carers give, people who are caring, they give their whole body, speech and mind to that person who's sick, looking after them, caring for them, complete generosity of their body, completely just giving. And, you know, the main carer, they need 24/7. And because the person often comes to this stage of being awake, being asleep, and, you know, but really caring for the person, your practice is there in, you know, all that you give, the generosity of your time, your care, your patience, your wisdom, all these different things. So around the time of dying, there's lots of practical considerations with wills and all sorts of different things, and having, you know, doing whatever you can to help the person with those sorts of things. Get legal advice for your will. You can get a will that you download offline or buy in a news agent or something. But if there's going to be conflict, it won't, the lawyers say it won't stand up if there's going to be challenge.
Venable, I'm just wondering, what about in the case of sudden death, is there a way that we can, like, retroactively dedicate for someone? Is there something that we can do when there's this, the unexpected death from an accident or?
Well, so sometimes when there's an accident, if it's a healthy person and things like that, sometimes, again, they can practice that supreme generosity that goes on to directly benefit others. And I did a funeral service for a 29-year-old woman who'd had an aneurysm and up until then lived an apparently perfectly healthy life. And her different organs took a family quite some time to be able to get their heads around this. And it is very difficult for the medical profession and the family to come to this decision about this, is because the family, suddenly they're faced with, you know, this person isn't going to survive this. But between, you know, the kidneys went to two people on the kidney list, and there are, I think, six people who benefited. You know, so those two people who got kidneys, they can come off dialysis. They can get back to having a life. 3 days a week, they're not attached to some machinery. And, you know, lungs, hearts, all these things were healthy in this young woman. And certainly we can, you know, do all the dedications. We can have prayers said by the nuns at Chenrezig or through FPMT, also the monks at Nalanda and this sort of thing. We can certainly, in their name, if we can work to help spread, the idea of donating, and every, you know, people putting their names on so as their organs can be donated, if, you know, in the event of their unexpected death, we can put our own names on the list and that sort of thing, raise awareness of the benefit of this for people. And of course, doing all the things about, you know, the dedications and even though they may not have had a calm, peaceful instant, then, you know, this sort of generosity of giving not just their blood, but, you know, because the rest of that quotation, it was about, you know, giving hands to those who need hands and things like this, you know. And as I say, I have no idea how they would have managed that 2,500 years ago, but it's about having the willingness. And, you know, still you can... sponsor pujas and things like that, request dedications at different places around. Yeah. You can read the Bardo prayer for 49 days. You can, yeah, all these things. And if the person has a spiritual faith and you have the capacity, you can donate to their spiritual faith. So whether it's, you know, Christianity or Judaism or Islam or whatever, you can also donate towards that and with prayers that they in future lifetimes also have a spiritual path, don't just have a life that's not a wrong life, but that they in future lifetimes they also meet with their spiritual path and progress along those spiritual paths. Yeah. So are there any more questions?
Not yet.
So I'll just read a letter that was I've rewritten it, I haven't got the letter here, but so the man I was looking at after that was in his sister's house, he was actually a monk, and so at the end of the very end of his life he couldn't talk. But he wrote to his teacher who came to visit, he wrote, "I want you to know that I'm enjoying a beautiful calmness and peace of mind, nor do I fear death. This is not my first time and it won't be my last. So I think it's better to accept and relax." So if we could all come to that, wouldn't that be lovely? That's the reason I've written it down and put it in here, because such a lovely thing. Such a lovely state of mind he came to. As I say, by that time he couldn't even talk. Talking was a disaster. So, and for a while we'd talk and he'd write the answer, but then he had to make us write, because if we talked, he'd automatically talk back. And so that usually finished up with coughing and oxygen and all sorts of things and us all going, oh. But in the end, he died very peacefully. So we're going to do the Medicine Buddha meditation. So if you can just sit and I'll lead you through it. But this is something that we can do ourselves as Buddhists. And we don't have to, we can do it when we're sitting with someone, or we can do it when we're, you know, if we're caring, when we're away from someone else is with the person, whatever it might be. And it's written in terms of benefit to us, but if you're doing it for the person, if they're Buddhist and they want you to do it out loud, you can do the visualization with the Buddha sitting on top of that person's head or a few inches above the top of their head, and read it, the rest of it. So you can, conceivably, you could visualize it on top of your head as well as their head. So just having a little wriggle and then sitting comfortably, settling your mind on your breathing. Generating positive motivation. Lama Zopa Rinpoche says that a healing practice is most effective when we have an altruistic motivation, the wish to benefit others. So thinking that we're doing this in order to help all beings become free from suffering, such as diseases, and also the causes of suffering, the deluded states of mind and negative karma. Visualize Medicine Buddha. There's a picture of Medicine Buddha on your screens if you're not used to the visualization of Medicine Buddha. A few inches above the top of your head, sitting on a moon disc, resting in the center of an open lotus. His legs are crossed in the Vajra or full lotus position, and he's facing the same direction as you. His body is made of bright royal blue light, the colour of lapis lazuli, and every aspect of this visualisation is made of light and radiates light. His right hand rests on his right knee in the gesture of granting sublime realisations and holds the stem of an arura medicinal plant between his thumb and his first finger. His left hand in his lap is in the gesture of concentration and holds a lapis lazuli bowl filled with nectar. He's wearing the three robes of a monk and has all the signs and marks of a fully enlightened Buddha. His face is peaceful and smiling, looking at all living beings in the universe with compassion and loving kindness. Try and feel that peace and compassion emanating from him to you and all beings. So I'm only going to read the refuge prayer once, the other prayers, but you can read as many times as you like when you do the practice. I go for refuge until I'm enlightened to the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Supreme Assembly. By my practice of giving and other perfections, may I become a Buddha to benefit all sentient beings. May all sentient beings have happiness and the cause of happiness. May all sentient beings be free from suffering and the causes of suffering. May all sentient beings be inseparable from the happiness that's free from suffering. May all sentient beings abide in equanimity, free from attachment and anger that holds some close and others distant. To Bhagavan Tathagata Arhat, fully enlightened Buddha, medicine guru, king of lapis light, I prostrate, go for refuge and make offerings. May your vow to benefit sentient beings now ripen for myself and others. Then visualize infinite rays of white light flowing down from the heart and body of medicine Buddha. This light fills your body and purifies all disease, afflictions due to spirits or black magic, and all the causes of these problems, your negative karma, delusions, and mental obscurations. All these negativities leave your body in the form of a thick black liquid like oil or smoke. Your body becomes clean and clear as crystal. And imagine that all other beings are being purified in the same way. And we're going to recite the mantra of Medicine Buddha, but only seven times. If you're doing this yourself, of course, you can recite as often as you want.
Tayata Om beckons air, beckons air. Maha beckons air, beckons air. Raja Samogate Soha. Tayata Om beckons air, beckons air. Maha beckons air, beckons air. Raja Samogate Soha. Tayata Om beckons air, beckons air. Maha beckons air, beckons air, Raja Samogate Swaha. Tayata on beckons air, beckons air, Maha beckons air, beckons air, Raja Samogate Swaha. Tayata on beckons air, beckons air, Maha beckons air, beckons air, Raja Samogate Swaha. Tayata on beckons air, beckons air, Maha beckons air, beckons air, Raja Samogate Swaha. Tayata on beckons air, beckons air, Maha beckons air, beckons air, Raja Samogate Swaha.
Visualize that the light flowing from the medicine Buddha fills your body again, bringing all the realizations of the path to enlightenment, all the qualities of the Buddhas and Bodhisattvas. And again, imagine all this happens to all other beings. Feel that you and all the other beings have actually received all these excellent qualities, and you've received the blessings and inspiration of Medicine Buddha. Then visualize that Medicine Buddha melts and absorbs into your heart, and your mind becomes one with the enlightened mind of all the Buddhas. let your mind just rest in that state, completely clear, peaceful, free from its usual busy thoughts and conceptions. This is the true nature of your mind. And we'll dedicate the positive energy of doing this meditation, that it brings true physical and mental health and happiness to all sentient beings, and be the cause for the eventual attainment of enlightenment for all living beings without exception. And then to finish, we're going to read the 9 verses that are in your handouts from Shanti Deva's prayers. Oh, you've got them on the screen?
No, they're...
Yeah, just... Oh, right. So they're just before the handouts, letting go, all these handouts. So the pages aren't numbered. So I hope you can all find them. Or if you can't, don't worry if you don't have them. We can just listen. So these are verses that His Holiness often uses to dedicate with. They're among his favourite dedications from a book called Guide to the Bodhisattva's Way of Life. May all beings everywhere plagued by sufferings of body and mind obtain an ocean of happiness and joy by virtue of our merits. May no living creature suffer, commit evil, or ever fall ill. May no one be afraid or belittled with a mind weighed down by depression. May the blind see forms and the deaf hear sounds. May those whose bodies are worn with toil be restored on finding repose. May the naked find clothing, the hungry find food. May the thirsty find water and delicious drinks. May the poor find wealth, those weak with sorrow find joy. May the forlorn find hope, constant happiness and prosperity. May there be timely rains and bountiful harvests. May all medicines be effective and wholesome prayers bear fruit. May all who are sick and ill quickly be freed from their ailments. Whatever diseases there are in the world, may they never occur again. May the frightened cease to be afraid and those bound be freed. May the powerless find power, and may people think of benefiting each other. For as long as space remains, for as long as sentient beings remain, until then may I too remain to dispel the miseries of the world. So thank you all. I hope you've enjoyed the course. We've covered many, many things. And so, you know, if there's something that we've covered that I didn't explain well enough, or some thought came up or whatever, you can email Lumbichumba Center and I'll do my best to, if it's a very long answer you require, I might request that you phone me so we can talk about it rather than me just type it on my phone. But whatever it is that might come up for you in terms of caring for people, try to remember that, you know, it's our karma to be asked by this person to help them, and be aware that any one of us can only do so much. Being kind to yourself, recognize this is how much I can do, and ask for help, ask for others to help you. Even if the help they give you is to do your washing, whatever it might be. Don't feel you have to do everything for this person. Even if you wish to, sometimes it's just not possible.
So, Venerable, there's many people saying thank you. Alison said, this has been amazing and I definitely feel more prepared.
Excellent.
And so also on behalf of Library Time of Centre, everybody here, just a little thank you. I'll just wave it in front of the camera so people know. A little thank you from us.
Oh, thank you.
And also for everybody who came today, please, you know, if something happens, don't be shy. Contact Library Time of Centre.
Absolutely.
Just like many of you have.
Absolutely. Yeah, because even if there's not a lot we can do, even if it's someone overseas, all these, we can make dedications. We can do our best to prepare ourselves for when the opportunity is there for us to be able to help or to be helped.
Wonderful. Well, thank you very much, Venerable, and thank you everyone for coming along and making this, you know, a really special event. And we hope to see you all soon.